Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode will cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 55. You can't buy PS5 in stores. Thanks, 2020.
All right. So this is going to be a relatively condensed episode.
By that, we mean we're not going to be waxing poetic for the next hour and a half. We're saving that for tomorrow.
Yeah. So tomorrow we do have an earnings show. That will be significantly meatier. Meteor. We'll be talking.
No. Giant Meteor didn't win this election.
It's true. And we'll talk about that in just a second. So tomorrow we're talking Square,
yep.
Sega, Zynga, Nintendo, EA, and Take-Two. And especially, we're going to save EA and Take-Two for the end of the show because the contrast between those two companies and their perspectives on the outlook for the way the video game industry is going.
It's pretty much chef's kiss.
It is. It's really interesting. Before we jump in, as I said, this is going to be a relatively brief show. Everybody is so focused, A, on the console launches next week, and we will be getting our consoles with everybody else as consumers next week. We're picking up our Xbox Series
X. Did you just refer to us as consumers? I'm so insulted.
I mean, for this perspective, we are purchasing our consoles.
We're consumers in every perspective. I was just being contrarian.
Oh, okay. Consuming!
Consuming!
So,
who consumes the consumers?
Cthulhu.
Got it in two.
So I'm picking up our Xbox at 6 o'clock in the morning at Best Buy on Tuesday.
Dedication.
PlayStation 5. I really hope we have one this week. I have 3 pre-orders and I have no idea when any of them are going to show up. I am confident though that we are likely to have 2, if not 3, of the Xbox pre-orders that we got on Tuesday, and they have homes. So we will be putting this in the hands of friends at cost. All right. So that's what's going on. So the other piece of this is the election was literally just called 5 minutes ago. I want to say that our long national nightmare is over, but we still have 2 months and a bit before he gets dragged out of the White House.
Possibly kicking and screaming.
I really hope someone films it. He is going to be petulant. I hope that we are prepared, that our military is prepared, that our government is prepared. There are people some of his sycophants are already moving away from him. I'm really worried, though, for the next couple of months about what he might do to burn things down on his way out. So hopefully this ends relatively quietly. But man,
fight's not over, though.
Fight's not over. The fight is not over. And I think that's the important thing. Joe Biden is a centrist. He has already signaled that he wants to make peace. And here's the reality of the situation. We cannot stop fighting for racial justice. We cannot stop fighting for LGBTQIA rights. We cannot stop fighting for women's rights, especially with the way the Supreme Court looks right now. We cannot stop fighting for economic justice. We cannot stop fighting for our environment. The fight goes on. This election was the beginning of the work that we have to do, not the end. And
it's true.
We cannot rest.
We don't just get to go back to brunch.
No, we don't get to go back to brunch at all.
Was to quote our good friend Kate Sanchez.
Yes, I just saw her tweet that. So from my perspective, you know, you look at the progressive measures that passed in states, even where Democrats lost. To me, that indicates that there is an interest in being more progressive.
But party lines are very, very rigid, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the way this political system is set up. Look, as an immigrant and as a very anxious Canadian in America, especially over the last 3.5 years, yeah, I'm pretty pleased with this. Pretty okay with this, you know. But there's work to be done here, friends.
Indeed. There's a sigh of relief, but the work is just beginning. So let's not rest just because the election's been called and has started the process of removing a tyrant from power.
Indeed.
So let's jump in. First story we have today, Curve Digital continues to expand. Now Curve is a big family. There's a big tent. They publish. Curve Digital now has two Studios.
Yes.
They've announced the acquisition of Iron Oak, which has developed For the King.
Okay.
So For the King was actually published by Curve, so this is kind of solidifying an existing mm-hmm. relationship. That game now has more than 3 million players.
That's really interesting.
I'm not super familiar with it. Have you
played it? I have not. I do know Iron Oak, though.
Okay.
Because Iron Oak is, is a Vancouver studio.
They are. They were founded in 2015. For the King is actually due to expand. DLC is due out later this year. And then next year as well. So obviously with 3 million players, there's a good reason to invest in that game if you're Curve Digital.
Indeed.
So this is also Curve Digital's second studio acquisition.
The first was Runner Duck Games, which is the studio behind Bomber Crew, and they purchased that in 2019.
Now, am I correct in remembering that there is kind of a spiritual sequel, a somewhat sequel to Bomber Crew coming out? I think I might have seen that in the indie mix.
During Not E3?
No, the recent one, the one that was 3 hours long. Oh,
yeah, no, I definitely did not watch like that.
Like a Space Crew type of thing. Oh, neat. But not Space Crew, obviously. That wouldn't be the name.
Good old Space Team.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe
I got
that's what it's called. Maybe it is called Space Crew. Maybe, I think... I could be misremembering.
Anyway, no terms were disclosed for this deal, so we don't actually know what happened there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Good luck to them both.
Yeah. What do we have next? This one's interesting to me, and we'll talk about why.
Oh boy. All right. So Acclaim co-founder.
Acclaim.
Acclaim. I've talked about Acclaim.
We have talked about Acclaim much, and we'll talk about why we talked about Acclaim.
And not even just for that panel, although uh-huh. definitely that panel. I also talked about it when I was helping to form up the oral history of Mortal Kombat.
Right. Of course.
That was really fun. So anyway, so Acclaim co-founder Gregory Fischbach has founded a new publisher, which is called Accelerate Games. Their first game will be a remake of Signal Studios' Toy Soldiers.
I absolutely loved Toy Soldiers when it was on Xbox 360 Arcade. The most recent entry in that series actually had licensed characters. So there was, I think, He-Man, and there was, like, G.I. Joe and Cobra.
Is that, that was the game, was that, like, based on the movie?
No. It was actually Toys, no. So Toy Soldiers.
Because I remember enjoying the game, but I don't remember why.
It's like a tower defense RTS.
That's what it was.
It's actually Toy Soldiers. So the original one was a World War I setting.
Right.
So it was.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And I remember enjoying it because I like those kind of games.
Yep. And the second one was, I believe, a little bit more contemporary. I think you had like, I don't remember if it was Rambo or if it was a Rambo-like character. Boy.
Anyway, important thing to note is that Microsoft surrendered the rights for Toy Soldiers to Signal with Accelerate Games Publishing.
Yeah, so that's really exciting. And I did not play the most recent one. I don't want to
see
Ubisoft published.
I got nothing. I haven't played it since the original. So Accelerate Games is looking to ship between 6 to 12 games each year. But Mike, we should talk a little about Acclaim. Just like a little.
We should. Yes. Ubisoft published the last one. It was called Toy Soldiers War Chest.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. I'm pulling this up because this was just a bunch of madness.
That sounds like Virtual Economy.
It had G.I. Joe and Cobra. Mm-hmm. It had Masters of the Universe.
Uh-huh.
It looked like it had Assassin's Creed.
That's wild.
Yeah. So let's call it a mix of strategy, defense, and action gameplay. So let's talk about Acclaim. So you may recall Acclaim.
I definitely do recall Acclaim.
Yeah. So my experience with Acclaim as a younger child was, I remember my dad loved like Stealth Bomber. I think Stealth Bomber mm-hmm. was an Acclaim title.
It might have
but
been.
But there were a lot of really good Acclaim titles.
There were, especially if we're looking back at like late 80s and then early through mid 90s, like Acclaim was the studio.
Yeah.
It was the label to pay attention to. If you wanted a guarantee of what was probably going to be a good game. Acclaim usually made good games.
Usually. And then things went a little off the rails towards the end when the company was started. They started to be edgy.
Yeah, they started to, they definitely started to move towards, especially that edgy marketing in the late 90s. I remember that, in especially in the late 90s, because I was reading magazines like PC Gamer back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime that I would go in there, it started to become like this running joke of, okay, what kind of trashy marketing is Acclaim going to have for its next game?
So speaking of trashy marketing.
So the reason why Mike and I know a lot about Acclaim beyond the whole, like, yeah, we were kids when we played a lot of these games, is because we sometimes run this panel at PAX.
Yep.
About the good and the bad and the ugly
of video game marketing. Yeah. So here's just, I'm going to run down some of the examples here. So just as a reminder, so the Burnout series, which is of course owned by EA now.
Right? Yes.
Those are Acclaim originally published the first couple Burnout games. Yeah. All right. So here's a list of the terrible things that Acclaim did in its death throes. They promised a $10,000 cash prize to, well, it was 6,000 pounds to UK parents who would name their baby Turok. So that one's just tacky.
That one's tacky. I don't know if that one's bad, but it's tacky.
And then it turned out that the people who had reportedly changed their names were actually actors. So the parents were act like it wasn't even real.
Oh.
Here is the first of the really bad ones. So there was this game called Shadow Man, and I think it just got like announced for re-release.
Did it?
Update or something like that. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Again, that was during Naughty 3. It's all a blur. So Shadow Man.
That was essentially 10 years ago, though.
Yes, because 2020. Shadow Man Second Coming was the sequel.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they wanted to get people to allow them to put video screens in the tombstones of their loved ones, the gravestones of their loved ones, to promote the game. Because it's a game about a guy, it deals with, like, death, right?
Oh, no, I'm familiar with this, and I'm also familiar with this marketing campaign.
So, the church in England, they didn't like that so much. So they said, a most holy no. Hell no!
Yeah. Right. That's going to be a hard pass. So anyway.
Hold on. There's more.
Oh, my.
There's more. So Acclaim.
We can't go through all in the of UK, them. There's so many.
This is their UK arm, though. This is like, that's three in a row, right? For Burnout 2, they tried to reimburse any driver in the UK that got a speeding ticket. Of course, the government did not like that.
I can't imagine why.
Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen sued them over unpaid royalties.
Oh.
I want to point out, though, that this was Greg Fishback left in 2003.
Yeah.
The Shadow Man Second Coming thing, that game.
That was later.
No.
Wasn't it?
Nope. That was released in February of 2002.
Oh, maybe that's part of the reason why.
We haven't seen him for a little while?
We haven't seen him for a little while.
I mean, he's been doing other stuff in the industry.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, something to consider is that, is it Fishback or Fishbach?
I've knew people who have spelled their name that way, and it was Fishback.
Americans.
But I don't know how he pronounces it. It could be
Fishback. Okay, so I'm going to say Fishback because that's what it looks like to me. So he was a lawyer in the 70s. He founded Acclaim in 83 and served as CEO until 2003. Important footnote, he actually helped to found the ESA and the ESRB.
Yes. Can I talk about the last really bad Acclaim thing?
And then we need to move on because we don't want to turn this into like an Acclaim drag session. Right.
So the company folded in September of 2004. So he was there almost until the end.
Almost until the end. And that was a pretty amazingly long amount of time. That was like 20 years.
Yes. And this game also was released under his watch. You may remember the BMX series.
I loved the BMX series.
But like, Amanda.
Oh, but I didn't love this.
Triple X.
Yeah, this was terrible.
Featured nudity and semi-nudity, full motion video of strippers and nude female riders. And they hoped that that would really help save the company.
That would be just titillating enough.
And Dave Mira's like, I'm out.
Yeah, well, that was the reason why I used to play those games, is because Dave Mira was involved, and I loved watching him in the X Games.
Which, you know, rest in peace, Dave Mira, you made a good choice here.
Yeah. Seriously.
So that's that.
Okay, well, that was a lot.
That was
for
definitely...
something that I thought was going to be a very very short story.
For the aughts, though, man. For video games, the early aughts.
You know what? The early aughts, it was the Wild West out there for marketing campaigns all over the place. It wasn't just a claim that was being edgy and weird. You know, they were trying to appeal to a lot of kids that were like my age, right? Because I mean, in the early aughts, I was a teenager.
Were they trying to appeal to you with BMXXX?
They were definitely not appealing to me with BMXXX, because at the time I was very much so not interested in objectifying women in video games. So, and I am still not interested.
I was about to ask. You said at the time.
At the time I didn't realize I was bisexual. That's what I'm really trying to say. Now that I know that,
yeah.
It's a little different. But objectifying, objectification in any way, shape, or form is not good.
Yes.
So anyway.
Look respectfully.
Always look respectfully. Always.
It's time for quick hits.
How do we even come back from that? I don't even understand. But
that's why I did it.
You know what's worse than all of that? Controls Next Gen will no longer be updated in 2021.
No.
Or is it out in 2021?
Yeah, it's being pushed out to 2021.
Oh, okay. I thought that it was like being pushed out of
2021. No. So,
your note in there?
Yeah.
Not good.
Next gen update will not... Oh, God, that's terrible. I needed coffee when I typed this.
Were you drunk?
I'm going to read this verbatim. Controls Next Gen updated will no be out in 2021. That's supposed to be now.
It will no be out.
That's supposed to be now be out in 2021.
Okay, I didn't understand.
All right, so let's try this again. So Controls Next Gen update. Remember that if you have the base game and the DLC, Manda is cracking up right here. I'm pushing on. If you own those, you don't get a free Next Gen upgrade. You have to buy the Ultimate Edition. So it was a kick in the knackers to anybody.
It really was.
Anybody who was there at the beginning.
And pulling knackers out of this, because we don't need to be doing that. It's just extremely, we talk about being anti-consumer, and that tends to be something that gets thrown around a lot by people that don't actually understand what being anti-consumer looks like. Friends, I'd like to point you to 505 Games and Controls Ultimate Edition. This is anti-consumer.
Yes. So you still need to buy the Ultimate Edition in order to have the next gen upgrade. But now, by the time this next-gen upgrade comes out, even the Ultimate Edition is going to be discounted. So the people who bought that at launch thinking, I'll play Control right when I get my new consoles on the new... Yeah. This is no shade on Remedy, by the way. Everybody's working remotely.
No.
Everybody is dealing with extraordinary challenges right
and
now.
This is not about
Remedy needing to delay something.
No,
the delay is fine.
No. This is not a Remedy problem at all. This is absolutely about the publisher. So all of this shade is intended for the publisher, not
absolutely.
For the developers.
Control's amazing. You should definitely play Control however you can, whichever platform you prefer.
Play it. It's magic.
And if you haven't purchased it yet, make sure you purchase the Ultimate Edition so that you can get the next gen upgrade. But Control's great. That is definitely one of my games of the year. It came out last year though, right?
It came out last year.
Yeah, it came out last year. We're going to call it retroactively my game of the year for last year.
Okay, that sounds real good.
Right.
You know what else is real good?
Yeah, what else?
BlizzCon Line will be free for everyone.
Yes.
This is the first time that they have done this. You will not need a digital pass to enjoy BlizzCon Line.
That's pretty great. I like that.
I really enjoy that. Okay, look. I know that we don't really have a lot of great things to say about Blizzard right now, because we definitely don't have many great things to say about Activision. Refer back to our financial episode from last week.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, I loved BlizzCon. I went to BlizzCon a couple of years ago for the first time, and it was genuinely magical. Even the whole Diablo Immortal thing, which I chuckled about in the back of the room.
Yeah.
Even though that wasn't handled, like, well at all, BlizzCon is really, really cool. And Blizzard really does know how to put on a show.
Absolutely. Let's see. SAG-AFTRA.
Ooh.
You may recall that there was a voice actor strike.
Yes, Mike, because you covered that extensively.
I did, and I'm going to toot my own horn just for a second. I won a good games writing award for that.
You did.
I wrote a big old explainer about what was going on. I also I also had some sources from the voice acting community reach out to me anonymously, and I had lovely conversations with them, reported on that as well. So they are actually, we're not going to see a voice actor strike again. They've actually renegotiated their contract with game publishers. And that contract will take them through the next 2 years, through November 7th, 2022. Wages are going to go up by 3% per year. Health and retirement contributions will increase by 0.5%. This covers Activision, Blind Light LLC, Disney Character Voices, Inc., Electronic Arts, Formosa Interactive LLC, Insomniac, Take-Two, VoiceWorks Productions, Inc., and WB Games. So there's a mix of publishers and recording and companies that handle recording talent.
Absolutely.
In there.
So this is kind of interesting. This is more up your alley than it is mine.
We'll talk about this.
We will talk about this. All right. So Doctor Who, The Edge of Time developer Maze Theory has opened up a new studio in Los Angeles in addition to its headquarters in the United Kingdom. Mike, why is this important?
Well, this is important for a couple of different reasons. First of all, huge Doctor Who fan.
That's why I was throwing this over to Mike again.
I love Doctor Who. I actually recently tried to play Doctor Who The Edge of Time on our Quest. I can't remember if I tried it on the Quest or the Quest 2. Maze Theory, if you're listening, I implore you, put some kind of teleportation mechanic in your game. Like, I don't often get simulation sickness.
No, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time, and it was with a student project. The last time, it was at the first Oculus Connect. It was a student project, and I got full-on sim sick. Very close to losing my lunch.
Gross.
But it took me a couple of hours to recover. I did not want to go anywhere near VR, and I had to because I was there working. But I love the idea of Doctor Who, The Edge of Time. It reminds me a lot. It's an adventure game. So like The Room, for instance. But
You love The Room.
The Room VR is amazing. If you've got a Quest, play The Room VR. But right now, like, it has a direct control. So you're actually walking around the environments. Mm-hmm. And it has a tunneling mechanism. I'm not going to get too far into the weeds. Where it kind of blackens out the sides of the screen so to help deal with motion sickness. Or sim sickness, but it did not work for me.
Got it.
And I didn't. But I would love to see them kind of go back and rework this a little bit so that it is a little bit more accessible. This is being led by former Oculus developer strategy lead Phil Greenspan. So he's in charge of the new studio in LA.
So he was one of Oculus's original employees and actually stayed on through the launch of the Oculus store.
Yes. They've grown their staffing by 30% during the pandemic. So that's pretty huge.
That's impressive.
And again, VR has done really well during the pandemic, along with the rest of the industry. And Quest, that has solidified untethered VR as
the future. Standard.
Yeah.
It's the present. It's the future. It's the always untethered mm-hmm. is the way to go.
They've also raised 1.4 million pounds earlier this year. It's going to be used for more Doctor Who VR and also Peaky Blinders VR.
You know what? That's kind of cool. I like Peaky Blinders.
I haven't watched it, but I kind of would like to.
We'll put that on the list.
That and Penny Dreadful.
Penny Dreadful, I hear, is very touch and go.
Well, I'm willing to give it a try.
We just finished watching the beautiful garbage that is the Silent Hill movies.
Yes.
So
who are we to judge, really?
Who are we to judge anything ever? Because I still love those movies, even if they are glorious trash.
Yep.
But you know what's... I don't love, even though I love horror games, Mike.
What's that?
This makes me so upset. So Bloober Team's The Medium, which I have been absolutely delighted about because yes. This is something that shows off what next gen is going to be capable of in terms of not just processing power, but in terms of a multi-threaded approach mm-hmm. with how it loads content because of the SSD.
Yeah, I feel like the two games that show that off the best are The Medium and Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah.
On PS5.
I agree. So The Medium has been delayed until late January. No, which
when was it supposed to come out, Manda?
It was supposed to launch on December 10th.
Why does that date ring a bell, Manda?
Because that's now the same day as Cyberpunk
2077. So they got the hell out of the way, Manda.
They did, but they also, listen, Blooper Team, I love you guys, and I support you in your decision to delay releasing your game, and I'm sure it's for no other reason other than you don't want to be buried underneath Cyberpunk, so I hear you, but at the same time, I was planning to play this over Christmas break, and now I'm very sad.
I'm sorry. Here's a good one, though.
January 28th, though.
Yeah, it is. That's great. We may choose instead to play the new game from Dontnod. In fact, we have not played Tell Me Why yet. So
no, we have not.
We haven't actually finished Life is Strange 2 yet. We have a lot to play over our break.
Do we get a break?
We're going to make a break.
Make a break for what? It.
For, yeah, exactly. Got it. So Dontnod has a new studio. This Dontnod, which is based in France, is the studio behind Life is Strange.
Tell me why.
Vampyr.
I love some Vampyr.
I knew you wanted to go there.
I have to. Every single time. I own Vampyr on like every platform ever.
Yeah, that's true. So they have a new studio in Montreal.
Oh.
They published Tell Me Why with Microsoft in August and September. So that was two parts.
That's right.
And then they are self-publishing Twin Mirror, which is due out on December 1st. And
that looks really interesting.
Yeah. And it looks like they're going to be leaning more into self-publishing. Remember, they worked with Square Enix on Life is Strange. They worked with Microsoft on Tell Me Why.
And they worked with Focus Home Interactive on Vampyr.
Yes.
So it'll be nice to see Dontnod taking more of a self-publishing approach, because they will no longer... They've proven.
Yes.
They've proven that they can create games that have a lasting impact, and it doesn't matter how many problems that we've all had with, you know, especially with like Vampyr, because when that game came out, combat was real frustrating. But man, they make really cool games at Dontnod. They definitely do.
Remember Me was their first.
I really enjoyed Remember Me. That game, again, that had a lot of problems, but I really enjoyed it for what it was. All right, Mike. What's next?
Tencent led a $25 million round of funding in Avakin Life maker Lockwood Publishing.
Okay.
So this is interesting to me. I pulled this story. Again, Tencent investing is always something that's going to catch my eye.
Of course.
But Avakin Life is a 3D virtual world sandbox. It strikes me as similar to Second Life. It's a Second Life style experience, maybe.
Okay,
they're trying to create the metaverse. They're also another company. So we got Roblox, we've got Fortnite and Epic.
Second Life is still around.
Oh boy.
It's still a thing that's around.
Is it still a Den of Iniquity?
Yes. Yes, usually indeed. So Lockwood was founded in 2009. They originally made avatars for PlayStation Home and Home's MMO style game Sodium.
Yes. Do you spend any time in PlayStation Home?
Absolutely not.
I did. I spent a little time.
It was not available in Canada.
Oh, I spent a little time in there. It was a weird place.
I remember when it launched, because I looked at my PlayStation and I'm like, okay, it launched. Why isn't it here?
Yeah.
So I don't think it ever, if it did come to Canada, it was just not something that I ever invested any time in, because it seemed absolutely the opposite of what I wanted in my life.
It was really strange. I remember logging, I think I logged in to see an Uncharted trailer, like, that was exclusively playing in PlayStation Home.
Of course you did.
And there were people, like, it was just weird.
Yeah, everything is very strange about PlayStation Home. All right, so Gun Media's Friday the 13th game is winding down. A final patch will be out this month and dedicated servers will be taken down. Quick play will still be available, but it will be peer-to-peer.
Yes. So this is interesting because this game ran into a number of troubles along the way. Remember, it was kickstarted.
It was.
And then what happened was it launched and there were a lot of people who wanted to play that game and they hit major server problems.
Huge
multiplayer problems, like more than you would normally see.
I think that they definitely didn't anticipate the hunger for Friday the 13th.
Yes. And they were open and honest about that, but it took them a little bit to get it going. And once the game hit its stride...
Oh, it's solid as heck.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit.
Yeah, that's the less good thing.
So there's a lawsuit brewing right now between two people, Cunningham, Miller, I believe. Cunningham, I think, wrote the original script and owns the rights to the script for the first movie, and Miller was the one who licensed it. So here's the deal. Because this was up in the air, Gun Media had to stop. They couldn't add anything to the game. They couldn't add anything related to Jason to the game. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. So that game stagnated. And they couldn't do much. So I went and I looked yesterday. And I you know, read the most recent story that I could find, which was in July. And I found a lawyer who was commenting on it. And then I asked the lawyer a question. He gave me a Judge Judy gif in response.
That was a really good Judge Judy gif.
It was. And then I went back and I read more of his feed, because I was just looking to engage in a dialogue a little bit, because as we do, trying to get expert commentary. But I ended up digging in a little bit. So the case is in appeals right now.
It is.
Now, in an appeal, remember, you're not retrying the facts of the case. You're retrying the application of the law in the case. So the weird thing here is it has been weeks. It has been months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Second Circuit. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for some kind of ruling and opinion on this to know what the disposition is going to be. But the weird thing about this is the suit is over the original script. Now, in the original Friday the 13th, which I have not seen but is on our list, Jason's not really in it. It's his mother.
Yes.
And there is a boy at the end, like an undead boy who's in the lake, right? Mm-hmm. And it's never said whether or not that's Jason. So what ends up happening is, if it turns out that there is some kind of confirmation that that is or isn't Jason, if they can prove that, that actually is material. So fan theory may actually have a material impact on this case.
I knew it. I knew one day.
It's
that headcanon would be super helpful.
It's super weird. So, and if you play the game, there is no... I was wondering this because I'm not super familiar with the movies. There is no part one Jason. And I'm like, why is that? There's like, it starts with part two.
Mm-hmm.
And then got part two, part three, all the way through. So the reason there's no part one is because Jason's not really in the first one.
Yeah.
It's about his mother. So depending on the way this comes out, it could be that Cunningham does get the rights back to the script.
Sure.
But the script is, the suit is specifically about Friday the 13th part one, the first movie.
Yes.
Which wasn't even called part one, right?
It was. It was just called Friday the 13th.
That may not settle the disposition of Jason as a set, because he wasn't in, this is, again, this is just about, so Jason.
That's so much.
Jason could still be available for other things, but maybe come unmoored from his backstory because of legal settlement.
Well, IP shenanigans strike again.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. So we're all just sitting here waiting for the final disposition of this case to understand. That's why there haven't been any more Friday the 13th movies, even though this would have been a ripe time for it. It's why
this game
and other potential games are stalled.
Yeah, considering that Halloween, the addition to the Halloween series came out in 2018, and it was Girl Power, the horror movie, which was amazing. Let me be clear. Jamie Lee Curtis, literally for life.
Yeah.
I could sit here talking about horror movies until the end of time.
So real bummer here. I'm sure that the suit had a lot to do with this decision. You'll still be able to play the game, and they will be keeping database servers live. So if you do make progress, that will carry forward.
Yeah. It's just, they're not going to have dedicated servers available because that stuff is expensive. It is.
And those were quick hits.
And now it's a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back.
All right. This I didn't want to put in quick hits because
it kind of looks like a quick hit.
It does, but it's part of such a huge story that I didn't want to put it in quick hits.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about Epic versus Apple, obviously the antitrust suit that's going on.
How many episodes have we had that have had updates about this?
I'm like not counting five? Anymore. I stop. I'm going to go back and just read the control, the way I wrote that control note again, and that's just going to be the way I feel.
No good.
No do.
No do.
So, you might recall, though, that Epic didn't just sue Apple, they sued Google as well.
They did, and Google apparently tried to delay that case until October, wait for it, 2022.
And the judge is like, nah.
Nah.
Nah. So, the way this works is you have the parties come together, they have to decide, they have a case management conference, they have a scheduling conference.
Yeah.
So, it's not like the judge says, this is when it's going to happen. The two parties do have input.
Yeah.
On when they're going to come in. So Epic wanted to try this out in February 2021, which is interesting because that would actually put it ahead of the Apple suit. I'm not sure that's a good idea for them.
I feel like
they have a better chance against Apple. And if they lose against Google, Apple will use load that into the gun and use it as ammo.
Yeah, agreed.
So the Apple case is set to start in May 2021. We don't know yet when the Google case will start.
But October of 2022 is, in fact... a no-go.
Yes. I think at this point they're more likely to see October 2021. The judge wants them to get their stuff together and, like, come on, get a move on. Like, yeah. don't drag this.
They're a giant company. They've got a giant legal team. They can figure it out.
They do. All right. So that was our quick hit, not so quick hit.
But now
we have two stories.
Now we have two stories, and the one that I am most excited about is, first of all, Happy N7 Day.
Happy N7 Day, everybody.
Happy N7 Day, because EA has finally announced Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Mike?
Okay.
More details.
All right. So, in August of 2016, let me go back to E3 of 2016.
That was a weird time.
It was. I was supposed to have an interview with Patrick Soderlund, who was the head of internal studios at EA. It was, co-founder of DICE, and, you know, he was the guy.
Yeah, he was the guy.
And he got ill or something, and EA PR got in touch with me during E3 and said, hey, Patrick's not able to do this interview. We'll make it up to you.
Sure.
So I had an exclusive at Gamescom that year. Mm-hmm. So it was right before EA's press conference at Gamescom. I'm sitting down.
It was like right around my birthday, wasn't it?
Right around your birthday. I'm sitting down with Patrick, and we start talking. We talked about a lot of different things. And I said, so everybody else is doing these collection remasters. Mm-hmm. EA really hasn't jumped on that boat yet.
Right.
Obviously, people are super interested in one in particular.
I wonder what it is.
And he hinted very strongly, like, winky winky, this is coming, but didn't actually come out and say it.
Right.
Fans are gonna be real happy. Fast forward four years
later.
So I'm just gonna say I was right. I was 4 years early.
That's a whole development cycle.
That is. I think, but seriously, I do think this thing has been in some form of development. That long.
Yeah,
because it was a no-brainer. It was low-hanging fruit. People have been asking for this since the beginning of this generation.
They have been. And it's just in time for next gen.
It is. So let's talk about what it is and what it isn't.
All right. So it is not a remake or a reimagining. So we are not looking at, like, Resident Evil remake style nonsense.
Or Demon Souls.
Or Demon Souls or any of that. This is neither of those things. Instead, what this is a modernized experience. So it will be updated textures, shaders, models, effects, and technical features.
Now, here is what it is. Here's the big thing about what it is and isn't. It's single player only. Now, obviously that doesn't really have a material impact on Mass Effect 1 or 2, but it does have a significant impact on Mass Effect 3. There were a lot of people who really loved Mass Effect 3's multiplayer. And you there will still have a place in your heart, but not on your new consoles because,
multiplayer is very difficult.
Yeah. And it's expensive. You've got the servers. Again, just as we talked about with Friday the 13th, not only do you have dedicated multiplayer servers, but you've got database servers. And
another thing to note about the single player experience is that this will include all of the promotional and DLC content for each of the games.
And this is, again, now very important for Mass Effect 3 on the positive side, mm-hmm. because I think the Prothean character was only if you pre-ordered the game.
I definitely pre-ordered the game and then immediately turned it off when I lost Talizora.
Oh.
She died in my game and I was like, I'm done. I can't play this game anymore. Tali's my girl.
So it's going to be very interesting. It's coming out natively on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC. However, they are talking about forward compatible and enhancements for PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S. Now that, I don't know. This is, the language around this was really confusing to me. Mm-hmm. Now, On Xbox, it's a little bit different because we've got smart delivery, we've got the different versions.
Mm-hmm.
But they're talking about enhancements. It seems like it will run as a backward compatible game with enhancements for those consoles as opposed to... But at what point is this like a native PS5/Xbox Series X/S game?
Or I don't
know. A back compat game that takes advantage of some of the features? Like...
We will have to see. We will definitely have to see. Do we have an idea of when this is supposed to be coming
out?
Spring
2021.
There we go. But wait, Mike, there's more.
There is.
There is a veteran team, according to
the blog post.
According to the blog post, a veteran team has been hard at work envisioning the next chapter of the Mass Effect universe. They're in the early stages on the project, can't say any more just yet, but they're looking forward to sharing their vision for where they'll be going next.
Okay.
So here's where we need to take a big pause, because as much of a BioWare fan as I have been for many years, it's like BioWare and Blizzard, those were big pieces of my gaming life for mm-hmm. many, many years. I have been routinely elated by both of these companies until relatively recently.
Yeah. My question here is, at what point do we look at BioWare and say there's a big problem here? And
we have done that. We've seen it.
But at what point does EA look at this and go, we're now throwing good money after bad? Now, the reason why I'm saying that, obviously Dragon Age has been solid.
Oh, yeah.
People didn't like quite as much. I enjoyed it.
The story in 2 was great. I wasn't a huge fan of the combat in 2. That was my only gripe. I still really, really enjoyed the story.
I think the issue for a lot of people in 2 was you're in Kirkwall the entire time, right?
Yeah.
And even the areas you go to around Kirkwall, they are very clearly recycled. Now, some recycling is going to happen.
When we've talked about asset reuse and the importance of that, especially in indie games, because, you know, you want to make sure that your development cycle is tight, that you're working smart, not hard.
And at the same time, this is what sticks out in my mind from Dragon Age 2 on the visual side. Obviously, I did love the story.
Oh, the story was fabulous.
Hawk is awesome. I love that cast. But I remember there is the area at the outskirts where you go into the cave.
Yeah.
And you could actually see, like, this is one cave. They blocked this off from this one, and it's only blocked off by some barrels. Like, I can see where I was the last time I went into a cave similar to this, right over there.
Yeah.
Or this door is locked, and I just can't open the door.
Okay, but the point is that Dragon Age Inquisition was also an extremely solid game. It was critically successful as well as commercially successful.
And I have not played much of it, so I'm tempted after
I've played
Nier,
it four times.
I'm tempted after Nier to make that my next stream.
Four times. All the way through, four times. That is how much I love Dragon Age Inquisition. I only played Dragon Age 2 twice. I played Dragon Age Origin 3 times. I have a massive, massive love for this series. And I love Mass Effect as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you're right. I think that because we've seen BioWare trip at the finishing line with Mass Effect Andromeda, and with the rework that is currently underway for Anthem, at what point does EA look at BioWare and say, something's got to give, friends?
Yes. So Andromeda was a problem in a lot of ways. There were some narrative issues. They dead-named a trans character.
Oh, that was
And they
so fine. Rough.
They did go back and fix that, but that was terrible. But there was also like some character animations that were really messed up, and visually it just was not a good experience.
It was very Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah.
In a number of ways. And Assassin's Creed Unity is one of the only Assassin's Creed games that I, to this day, refuse to touch.
And on the Anthem side, like, you and I both agree, like, there is a core to Anthem that is so satisfying. The traversal in that game, flying, that Iron Man.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The javelins are so, so great. But there was a lot of problems with that. There was a loot problem with that game. There was a content problem with that game.
There was a lot of sit around and do nothing in that game, which was unfortunate. Because if they tighten up that gameplay loop and they really make the narrative something... Not just about your character, which you can customize and whatever, but making it specifically so that all of the other characters are so good, they're so memorable, like they stick with you forever. Like Dragon Age characters, they stick with you forever. Mass Effect characters, they stick with you forever. Knights of the Old Republic characters stick with you forever.
Every time I see, we just watched an episode of Criminal Minds with Raphael Sabarge, and I'm like, that's Garth Onassi.
And it's so great. I mean, like, listen, Knights of the Old Republic came out when I was a teenager, so my memory is a little hazy on that front. But the
thing I do want to say about Anthem, if you look at what they're doing, I devour every one of those dev vlogs that they put up.
We're waiting with great anticipation and dread.
Yes. it's moving closer to Destiny. Remember in Anthem, you had javelin abilities and your javelins leveled up, but you as a pilot didn't. They're changing that. There's going to be a pilot skill tree. So you as a pilot will get better. The other things that are going... Wait, or is it the other way around? That was a pilot progression, but not a javelin progression?
I don't remember. There was... Listen, it's been 2 years.
They're changing it to so that there's more of a there's more progression.
Wait, has Additionally, it been 2 years?
It's been 2 years because I went out to go preview it in February of 2018, I think.
Oh, I think
you for Variety.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, because I also on that same trip I previewed Crackdown 3.
That's right. It has almost been 2 years. That's pretty bonkers.
And the loot system. The other thing, and this is a cardinal sin of loot games, is if you drop loot for me and I can't look at it. Until and I can't equip anything new until I get back to the base, then you're muting the impact of getting a really good drop. Avengers does this really well. Yes, it means we're saying, okay, we just finished this thing up, everybody take a couple minutes to look at your gear, shred whatever you need to gear up.
But that's part of what makes Marvel's Avengers so interesting, is that very satisfying. It's a, you know, it's a quote unquote looter shooter in, you know, in a very literal sense. So but the loop is so good, and I think that Anthem's loop could be that good, if not better, because it's in a completely different and original IP. It's not about the gameplay. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. It's not about the core gameplay, anyway. It's about everything else that goes into making it a lasting experience.
So I'm pretty confident that Dragon Age 4 is going to be good. I think BioWare like has not lost the thread on Dragon Age. I'm very concerned about Mass Effect.
Yes.
And I'm concerned about BioWare in general and what it could mean for BioWare and the Mass Effect franchise if a new BioWare game fizzles. And by the way...
A new Mass Effect game fizzles.
Right, a new Mass Effect game fizzles. And I'm going to be honest here, if that Legendary Edition isn't amazing, that's going to be a blow too.
It absolutely is going to be a blow. So BioWare and EA need to be very, very careful with how they are messaging and marketing the Legendary Edition, in addition to having any conversations about what's going on with this new chapter in Mass Effect. They cannot handle it the way that they handled Anthem, and they cannot handle it the way that they handled Andromeda. They have to be extremely careful and laser precise, which they can do. But the problem is that internally at BioWare, they are very focused on the magic of making video games. Mm-hmm. And the magic is important. You need that in order to have incredible experiences and beautiful narratives and memorable games. But you also need to ship. And you need to ship a game that is going to sell well at the end of the day.
My last thought on this, and I'm going to cast my line way into the future here.
Okay.
If I'm EA, mm-hmm. I am watching people's reaction to the lack of Mass Effect 3 multiplayer right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to think, okay, people really loved that.
What do we do?
How can we give people that experience?
Do we give them something like Star Wars Squadrons?
Yeah. Or do we give them something like Apex, but... set in the Mass Effect universe, not a first person shooter, but a third person co-op thing that has that. Because remember, Mass Effect 3 had recurrent monetization.
It did.
It had loot boxes.
It definitely did.
But how do we do that? How can we take advantage of the love for Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, even though we aren't going to do it for
this release? Yeah, because it's too much.
Yep. And quite frankly, I think that is the place we're going to be talking more about EA tomorrow. And their earnings, but this was just big news and we didn't want to let it slip until tomorrow. We have one more thing to talk about. This is kind of leading into, I think we're going to try to do a launch special next week.
We're going to try.
We're not getting our consoles until this week, so we'll see what we can get done in between because we have other work that's going on at the same time.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Do we not also have 4 children?
I shipped them off.
Oh, where did they go?
I don't know.
Oh.
They're in a box. I just brought them to UPS. I threw a label on them and I just forged a label. I think they're going to a red state or something. They're going to grow up. They're going to vote. It's going to be great. What?
Okay, so everything about that was bad.
I sent them to a good one.
Okay. I love you.
I sent them to Florida.
No, that's a bad one.
Oh no.
Oh no, you...
Can I get them back?
I don't know. I don't know where you sent them. Why did you send our children in boxes? Anyway, our children are fine. They're actually here. They're just outside the door. But point is that Mike and I...
I'm glad that you had to clarify that I didn't actually ship our kids somewhere.
Listen, it's you we're talking about here. You never know. You never know.
Speaking of boxes, next-gen consoles.
next-gen consoles. So anyway, Mike and I have a lot of other responsibilities on top of being professionals, including being parents. So we will do what we can. But we specifically want to talk about PlayStation 5.
Yes.
Because this launch for PlayStation 5, while it has been extremely messy, and let me tell you, it has been extremely messy. We had a podcast episode about this back in September, for crying out loud, and we talked through a lot of the pre-order stuff that was going on and where the hits and the misses were, and PlayStation, to my memory, had a lot of misses.
The challenge with the PlayStation messaging, as we've talked about, is every time they had a really strong communication beat, a marketing beat, or a PR beat, something somewhere along the way, right after, they stumbled. And it was always something.
It was always something.
It was just like, hey, really good communication, really good presentation, something right after. So, look, I think that they are positioned, as we talked about last week, they are positioned exceptionally well for software.
Yeah.
Much better than Microsoft, especially with the medium slipping into next year.
I have to get real close so we can talk about Bugsnax. Bugsnax! Okay, anyway, I'm done yelling about Bugsnax for now.
So here's the thing. Sony has announced that you will not be able to walk into a store and purchase a PlayStation 5 this holiday.
So that this is pure speculation. Let's talk about this in terms of, we don't have the details. We're not on the inside with Sony. We're not on the inside with Microsoft. We don't actually know what their production pipeline has looked like. We don't know what their supply chain
Like. We do know that there is going to be supply for Black Friday.
There will be.
And you will see a pop-up. You're going to need to be diligent. If you sit at your desk and you work at your desk, have a tab up for all of your retailers, all the different pages that you, so you, at Amazon and Best Buy and Target and Walmart, you're going to want to have a page up on those product pages.
Make sure you look on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yes, absolutely.
Those are the biggies, believe it or not.
So
anyway, like, this is speculation. We do know that they are going to have supply available in limited supply.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is that we're still in crisis mode.
We are. I want to talk about something Matt Piscitella said before we go further.
Sure.
The company, whether it's Microsoft or Sony, whichever one sells more consoles this holiday, is probably going to be a factor strictly of supply.
That's
not about demand.
Nope.
Because those consoles are going to fly, because both of them are excellent pieces of hardware from what we've seen.
Exactly. And what this comes down to, and actually Matt talked about this, I think this was yesterday, is that he's anticipating a 40% cross-gen purchase.
That's huge.
That's enormous. So it's not about one or the other. It's about both and. It's just a matter of when you make your both and decision and what goes first.
Absolutely. So I personally think, we talked about, there's not going to be any PlayStation 5s in store. I think Microsoft is following suit based on some of the things I'm seeing.
But
they
haven't
made an announcement. Sony made an announcement this week and said, quote, "In the interest of keeping our gamers, retailers, and staff safe amidst COVID-19, today we are confirming that all day of launch sales will be conducted through the online stores of our retail partners."
So no units will be available in-store for purchase on launch day, which is November 12th or November 19th, depending on your region. So please don't plan on camping out or lining up at your local retailer on launch day in hopes of finding a PlayStation 5 console for purchase. Be safe, stay home, and place your order online.
Yeah, so I want to just make very clear. I said at the beginning that it was this holiday. Sony has just said for launch, they don't want people crowding in on launch day.
Yeah. So this is not about Black Friday. This is not about, because remember, especially in the United States, and it's also filtering up to Canada, Black Friday is a really big push, especially in consumer technology. Yep.
Best Buy, on the other hand, has said that they will not be carrying either new console in store this year. You're going to have to purchase them online and do store pickup.
They don't want people camping outside their outside their stores. They need to keep their people safe, and they want everyone to keep each other
safe.
And
quite frankly, Target and Walmart and GameStop should be following suit at this point.
Walmart absolutely will not follow
suit. No, they
won't. I would anticipate us seeing this from Target, absolutely. Yep. But it's not very often you see big lines outside of Target anyway.
It's true.
So we'll just have to see how it ends up going. So Walmart will have PlayStation 5s next Thursday at 12 p.m., 3 p.m., 6 p.m., and 9 p.m. Eastern. Yep. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's on launch day.
That's on launch day. And then the Xbox Series X at 12 p.m. on Tuesday.
So the one thing that's unclear, because I went back and I looked at Wario's tweet and Walmart's announcement, they said 12 p.m., 3 p.m., 6 p.m., or 9 p.m. So it's not clear if they're going to have them at all of those periods or if it's like, could be one of these. Hope you show up. I don't know.
Shoot your shot.
Yeah. Pew, pew, pew.
That's terrible.
So the one thing I want to talk about real quickly is my experience with Best Buy. Now, as we've talked about in the past, we try to pre-order from as many places as possible because I don't trust that any of them are going to get here.
And not only that, you know, not all of our friends are sitting at their desks all day and may not be able to pick it up or whatever. Yep. So we try to do right by the people in our lives and give them a hand too.
Yes. And again, no scalping, only at cost.
Never.
So Best Buy is where I'll be picking up one of our Xbox Series X's. So here's what happened. I got an email. Hey, we noticed you had a pre-order for an Xbox Series X. You need to set up a time to come in. We're open from 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. for pre-order pickups.
Very nice.
That's great. They added 3 hours. They do it. You go into their site. You pick your pickup time. They tell you don't show up before. You have a half an hour window. Don't show up after. Otherwise, there'll be a delay. That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, makes sense.
Then they send you a confirmation email. Hey, you scheduled your appointment, which for me is 6 a.m. on Tuesday.
R.I.P. You're going to need a nap.
I know. Then I got a phone call.
That was it. That was really interesting.
And it was someone from Best Buy calling me and saying, hey, just want to confirm your appointment. You're scheduled for 6 a.m. on Tuesday. Here's the process. You've got an appointment, so park. Don't wait in line. Those are people who don't have appointments. Come right up. We'll get you your console and get you out of here. Oh, I also noticed that you have a pre-order for the expansion card. Did you want to pick up your expansion card at the same time? Yeah, I totally want to pick up my expansion. Great. We'll make sure that that's bundled with your order. You'll get them both. Do you have any questions? No. No questions. Okay. So just to remind, here's the process. We're looking forward to seeing you. And that was it. It was really great. It was professional. It was
Very courteous. Orderly.
It was courteous. It was informative. It was a really interesting experience and I liked it.
Legit. I've worked at Best Buy. I worked at Best Buy when I was in university and I also worked at Staples. Like I've been around when it comes to, electronics retailing, and Best Buy almost always had the best, midnight launches and pre-order pickups because everything was just so efficient.
Yep. Now, I didn't have a great experience when I went to go pick up our DualSense controller charger today, but that was a fluke.
Eh, it is what it is. Yeah. So anyway, we just to wrap this up, we know that some retailers have announced a Black Friday allocation that will also be online only.
Yeah.
Do not expect this to end if you are in the United States and quite frankly in Canada, because Black Friday's bled up to Canada at this point. Although Boxing Day should make its way to the United States. That would be so much better. Anyway, my Canadian sensibilities aside, Black Friday is not going to be normal. This is not a normal year. There will not be giant crowds. And if there are, they will likely be dispersed.
I hope so, because, you know, Black Friday being a super spreader event doesn't sound great.
No, it sounds like the beginning of the division.
The dollar flu, everybody.
Yeah, so no dollar flus this year. Fingers crossed. So anyway, stay home if you can. And make sure that if you're doing your Black Friday shopping, even though we are still weeks away from Black Friday, make sure you're doing as much of it online as you can, or you're supporting local retailers.
Yep. And that about wraps us up. We're going to be back tomorrow with an earnings episode. This has been...
Episode 55.
Episode 55. You can't buy PS5 in stores. Thanks, 2020.
Good times. Yep. Well, thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. It's been really great having you here.
Yes.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Virtual Econcast. I am at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H. You can also subscribe to our RSS feed if this is your first time here. Welcome. We'd love having you. We'd love to have you be a regular listener. You can subscribe to that RSS feed at virtualeconomy.libsyn. That's libsyn.com/RSS. You can also listen to us on pretty much all of your favorite podcast delivery services. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. There's one more.
Pocket Sand!
Oh, right in the face.
Right in the face.
So yeah, we'd love it if you subscribe. And if you can on your platform of choice, review the show. Let us know what you think.
You can also DM us with questions. And that's, again, at Virtual Econcast on Twitter. You can also send questions to podcast@fsquared.biz. If you have something that's particularly sensitive, both Mike and I have access to Signal. All you need to do is send us an email, send us a DM at either of our personal accounts or at Virtual EconCast and let us know, hey, this is sensitive. Let's talk on Signal. Neither of us have Proton Mail, though, so Signal's the best way to get in touch with us.
Absolutely.
So we'll be back tomorrow. And in the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
Talk to you soon.